Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so honored to have on the program today Grammy Award winner, also author, multi-platinum selling artist, New York Times best-selling author, actor, celebrity, hip-hop legend, Coolio. Coolio, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm all right, man. How you doing? What's going on this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. We're getting close to the weekend for sure, and you definitely have accomplished a lot in your career for sure. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I work pretty hard. Slave to the rhythm.
Yeah, I hear you, and most definitely, and that's something that you did. Always, did you want to be a recording artist, rapper? Was that something you always wanted to do?
I started rapping just because I enjoyed it. I watched people around me for a couple of years start to get record deals and everything. I want to be cool, so I mean, it just happened.
Right, exactly. It just happened in so many ways. Tell me specifically, when was your big break? When was that break that made you that made you a household name? Tell us how it happened, the story.
Well, I started off, kind of regional. I put out my first single, but it was called County Line. And then I got the song from a producer friend of mine, and I didn't really like the song. I'm really feeling this, man. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I didn't like it. And so he asked me, "Well, you know what, man? You might not like it, man, but just do it for me. You know what I'm saying? Just do this one for me."
Right, right.
Okay, so the original lyrics. Remember the song "Rolling with My Homies" from the Cougar soundtrack?
Yeah, yeah. I remember that, yeah.
Okay, those lyrics were originally the lyrics for another song.
Mm-hmm.
And that song is Fantastic Words. So I wrote Fantastic Words, and it was the lyrics from Clueless, were the original lyrics. And so when I turned the song into my record company, one of the A&Rs over there, his name was Ian. He said, "You know what? If you change the lyrics to this song and make it more universal, so more everybody can relate to it."
Right.
He said, "I think this could be a hit." And I was like, I gave him that look, like, let me do the rapping, you do the A&R. But what he said stuck in my mind. And when I got home, I rewrote it into the Fantastic Voice that you know of today. So it instantly went, wasn't no viral back then, but I guess you could say it instantly went viral. And everybody wanted to hear it, everybody wanted to be a part of it. And, we had an amazing video, and I think that was the defining moment that let me know that I actually did know what I was doing.
So how did that change your life once that happened, once you became big and people knew who you were? Tell me how it changed.
I mean, everything changed. I mean, the way I perceived things, the way I dressed, the way the car drove, the house I lived in, and everything.
And then once you received your first Grammy and different things like that, that felt great, didn't it? It really kind of...
Well, the Grammy came on the second album. And, Gangsta Paradise is I think Gangsta Paradise is its own entity.
Yes.
I mean, it's out. It's a part of me, but also it's by itself. It's alone. And, you know, I often say, you know, people ask me, who wrote Gangsta Paradise? And I say, I used to say me.
Right.
Now I say, I didn't write Gangsta Paradise. X Paradise wrote me. X Paradise was going to be on this planet one way or another, whether I wrote it or somebody else wrote it. I'm a vessel through which it came.
Right, exactly. And it's something when it just came to you and it was something. And did you know once you wrote, when you wrote this, you said, this is going to be huge? Did you just have that feeling?
I thought I had a chance. And I said, you know, this could be a good song right here. I let my record company in, Tommy Boy, and they didn't think so.
Really?
So, you know, as a matter of fact, I asked this guy, Ian, I said, so what do you think of the song now? How you feel about it now? He said, I played it at one of the meetings, and, you know, most people thought it was just, album fodder. You know, just a song for the album. It'll be a good album song. So when he told me that, I said, really? I said, okay. So I guess you guys don't mind if I use it on the soundtrack. And he said, sure, go ahead, do whatever you want. And that was it.
And then once it started playing, and especially it just went crazy in that time for sure. And it's something, a hit that we hear all the time still, used in so many ways, isn't it, Coolio? In certain aspects.
All right. Some things happen, some things don't. I mean, you just got to be in the right place at the right time with the right mind.
Exactly. And would you say you've kind of reinvented your brand a few times in your career, especially after Gangster Paradise and kind of getting out into the more mainstream in so many ways?
Yeah, I've had to, you know, add some things and omit some things in my life in order to remain, you know?
Exactly. Definitely.
You know, I never won a GQ Band of the Year award, though.
But a lot of other things. Now, did you ever think you'd be an author? Did you ever think that you'd act? Did you ever think that you'd do some of these other things? Cook, you know, all that?
I was never afraid. And, you know, I've always done little characters and mostly funny stuff, you know, and to entertain my friends. So, once I got the call to do, you know, my first thing on television, I mean, I was totally prepared, and it came just as natural as rapping.
Exactly.
Because acting, singing, telling jokes, no matter what it is, it all has a certain rhythm.
It definitely does, as we're talking to hip-hop legend Coolio on the Total Celebrity Show. Absolute honor to have you on for sure and talk to you. Now, Coolio, what are your latest projects that are going on right now? What are you promoting right now?
Well, I got a cookbook out. It's called Cooking with Coolio. And we're working on the second one. You can check out some new music if you just go on YouTube. And type in my name, and all kind of stuff will pop up. We're working on a new album right now, which is going to be socio-political. I mean, it's going to be a couple of fun things on there, but mostly it's going to be real. And let's see, we got Jarrell Posey, who is about to wrap up his third album. You know, we promoted the hell out of that. It did really well. He's been in the top 10 for the last year in the smooth jazz charts. Let's see. We're getting ready to shoot the cooking show again and put that out. We're gonna do two versions of that. We're gonna do the webisodes, and we will be doing a half hour or hour show for just, you know, that we're gonna tailor just for television.
Interesting. Now, Coolio, now let's talk about cooking. How did that come up? Have you always liked cooking, or did just something? Tell us a story about that. Yeah.
I try to be. I, like to get in there and get my hands and feet dirty sometimes. I used to feel about it, but when my mother passed away, I didn't like food anymore and enjoyed mealtime. So by being pointed out, by being called out by my daughter, because she, you know, said that I used to eat too fast.
Right.
So she called me out. She called me on it one day, and we spoke about it, and she told me that I needed therapy. Of course, I didn't go to therapy. I gave myself therapy, and I figured out that I didn't enjoy mealtime because I wanted everything to taste like my mother's food.
Oh, wow.
So I went on a mission to learn how to make my mother's dishes and recreate, basically, recreate the flavor of things that I grew up with. So just, you know, over a period of years, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how my mother cooked. I figured out that I had a refined palate. And the rest is history.
The rest is definitely history, and from the cookbook and the different things, what would you say is from writing your first cookbook, that your favorite dish? What would be your favorite dish?
It's a toss up between fork steak and finger licking rib steak and fall off the bone into your mouth chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'd have to let those two battle it out, and then maybe I'll be able to tell you.
Absolutely, definitely. And any acting? Are you doing any acting still, Coolio? Anything going on acting wise?
I haven't done any films this year to date. I'll probably do something later on in the year. But it actually is later on in the year. Maybe I'll do something before the year. I don't know.
You just never know if someone calls you, right?
Make sure you guys check out. It may start something online called Coolio's Comedy Cafe. We'll be doing little skits and, you know, little Vine skits and Instagram skits and just all kind of stuff.
What do you think of this change that we're seeing now of, you know, YouTube and music and doing television programming and stuff, and how it just can go viral that way now, and you can kind of do your own thing? What do you think of that, the changes and how things are?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a good thing sometimes, but it's a bad thing sometimes. So you gotta take the bad with the good. I mean, the good thing is, if, you know, if you have a problem, you can look it up on the internet. Or if you need to know something, you just look it up on the internet. If you, you know, want to put your music out, and, you know, you go to a record company and they tell you that if they don't want you because you're not really that good, well, you can still put your own music out. You know what I mean? The possibilities are limitless and endless. I mean, I don't know. Because I have a problem with certain things, and certain things are cool.
Right, exactly. It's like, you know, especially with how the music business has changed and with from the days of, you know, albums and CDs to now, where, you know, you just get it on iTunes, and the pirating that's going on and the different things, and how artists aren't protected like they were at one point in time. I'm sure that's frustrating for you, is for sure, to see that game, for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it used to bother me a lot, and I had to let it go.
Exactly. Okay, we're again talking to Coolio, and so Coolio, where's the best place we can find you so people can purchase your book, learn about the newest projects going on, listen to your music?
You can check me out at CoolioWorld.com, also JerezMusic.com. You can check out my Facebook, Coolio/Facebook. Check me out at Instagram at Coolio, you know, at Coolio, and my Twitter at Coolio. Check us out, man.
Well, thanks.
Also, my Vine is at Coolio, too.
And what do you think of Vine? That's pretty cool how quickly you can do those quick little videos.
Yeah, it's just funny.
It is. You always figure out something that can really entertain the audience. So, well, thanks for coming on the program, Coolio. Definitely want to have you back when you have a big announcement about another album or another opportunity. You're welcome to come on anytime. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, man, because, you know, like I always tell them, man, that's no bullhead.
Gotcha, man. Take care.
I can feel it, buddy.
All right, see you. All right, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and also Pinterest, Neil Haley. You can find all those different areas. And I'm telling you, I'm excited about this guest because he's got a great thing he's promoting, and that's always what we try to provide the celebrities. But also, I'm going to ask some cooking tips if we have some time. So I want to welcome the program, author, celebrity, Chef Seamus Mullen from the Food Network. Seamus, Chef Seamus, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. We're excited to talk to you. And it must have been it's been a whirlwind, your career and where you are today, for sure. When you became a chef, you didn't really know where you'd be. And this is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about this industry is you kind of start out and you follow your passion, you do what you love, and then you never know where it's going to go. And then I'm very fortunate that I've gotten to work with some really wonderful chefs and work on a bunch of different projects and really get to do what I love doing every day.
Well, absolutely. You're a regular on the Food Network. Tell us a little bit about what that's been like, for sure. Tell us about that.
Well, it's great to see people, you know, to see our whole country kind of take a greater interest in food. And certainly in the past 10 years, we've gone from chefs being guys that you know, when I got started, it was a pretty unglamorous job. You worked really hard, and there was no such thing as really as a celebrity chef, where there are very few celebrity chefs, and there weren't really any cooking TV shows, to where now this is a big part of mainstream American culture. It's great to see people embracing and getting interested about food. The Food Network has been a great vehicle for doing that.
It definitely has been. And how did you get started, and did you ever expect to get to this point where you're a frequent face on the network?
Well, I mean, in terms of getting started as a chef, I really just started cooking when I was a teenager and working in restaurants. And I always cooked with my parents and my grandmother. And my grandmother's grandmothers often do, said, listen, you should do what you love doing. She gave me great advice, and I followed that. And here I am some 20-odd years later doing the same thing I've been doing for about 25 years. And it's, you know, it's great. And then to actually start working on the Food Network, that was really an opportunity that came about from the folks at the Food Network reached out to me that I'd done a few small pieces with them. And they liked me on camera, and they thought that I would be a good fit for the network. And so I went on to do Iron Chef and the next Iron Chef, and I'm a frequent judge on Chopped as well. So I get to keep my feet wet and hang out with the folks over the Food Network from time to time, which is fun.
Definitely fun, and through that process, you've come to have great success with your restaurant and also a book and all those different things. And now, again, we're talking to Chef Seamus Mullen from the Food Network on the Total Celebrity Show, and you now have recently partnered with a famous designer, Trina Turk, and an event called Fashion Kitchen, which will be showcasing the Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week. Tell us about that partnership.
Yeah, this is a great partnership that I'm really excited to be a part of. It's always great to see fashion and the food world come together. They're both industries that are very, very passionate and creative industries. And there's a lot of crossover between the two, and I think there's a lot of crossover between what I like to do with food and what Trina does with fashion, and that's why it just seemed like a very it's a wonderful partnership. We're working on this this great project with CW by Corningware, which is all about amazing, vibrant, microwave and dishwasher-safe serving and cooking vessels. So you can literally go from cooking to serving with them. And it really reflects kind of my ethos about food, which is kind of keep it simple, make it vibrant, make it really attractive, make it exciting and accessible. So it's a really cool. It's a really cool partnership.
It definitely seems like a cool partnership for sure, but it seems a very unique partnership. Is there a correlation between food and fashion for sure in this?
There's definitely a correlation between food and fashion. You know, we really eat with our eyes first. So your first impression of a dish or an ingredient is a visual impression. And then from there, that starts to color how you you anticipate what it's going to taste like, and then you taste it. And all of that affects your palate, affects how you think about food, affects how you appreciate food. And it's really no different from fashion in that, you know, with fashion, it all begins in many ways with draping and with palette and color. So there's a lot of correlation there. And, of course, both are very, very driven by aesthetics and the visual impression. So that's the beginning. Of course, you know, there are lots of other crossovers between the two industries. But those are sort of the beginning place for it.
We're talking to Chef Seamus Mullen from the Food Network on the Total Celebrity Show. Again, my website, TotalTutor.net. For more information, tweet me at Total Tutor with questions, especially any entertaining questions or cooking tips for Chef. Now, Chef, what about your fashion? This being Fashion Week and everything, do you feel that you are pretty talented in fashion, or are you going to definitely ask some of the experts about that?
No, I'm going to have to defer to the experts on that. I know much more about setting the table and cooking the food. You know, typically I'm going to be wearing chef's whites and maybe blue jeans. So, although I do appreciate fashion, I wouldn't say that I'm a fashionista. I do have lots of friends who are designers. I do like to go to the fashion shows every once in a while. I probably go to one show a year just to check out what's going on and to feel part of the energy of Fashion Week, but I'm definitely much more about the food.
Well, I would say neither food or fashion is my expertise, so I know our listeners have some great questions, but what about some entertaining tips, especially, you know, different events start coming up, especially during the school year, you know, get-togethers, different types of parties, football season starting, all that stuff.
Yeah,
do you have some good tips?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into the fall, and of course we have the holidays to look forward to. It's always funny when we talk about the holidays, you know, right around now. But the reality is that it creeps up on us, and you got to start planning. So if you've got you know, maybe you're doing some tailgating, or you're doing a tailgate party, or you're gearing up for the holidays. There's always a lot of planning that goes into throwing a party and entertaining. And one of the great things about working with a product like TW by Corningware is you get it's very versatile four-piece casserole set that has, it's just very useful. There's so many things you can do with it. You can do prep in it, you can bake in it, you can serve in it, you can take it straight from the oven or the microwave to the table. But also it's just visually incredibly, incredibly stimulating. And it's really, it pairs so well with my food. One of the dishes that I'm doing for our Fashion Week event is I'm doing a roasted kabocha squash with a pomegranate yogurt. So you get these really bright yellows from the squash and green from the skin of the squash, and the yogurt, which is white, but then you have flecks of pomegranate in it that are really bright. That coupled with the colors of the pieces by CW by Corningware are really, really great. And it really makes everything pop, and it just makes it such a visual kind of piece for the eyes. Before you even dig in and get the food, you're already, you know, your appetite's already getting going just seeing it.
And for somebody who's, you know, first starting out trying to tackle some of these things, what recommendations do you have in that end, especially, you know?
When it comes to entertaining, I mean, I think a good thing to do is to come up with a plan and to do some batch preparation. Again, this is where we're using a product like the casseroles from CW by Corningware. Fantastic, because you can really prep in advance. You can set it aside in the refrigerator, and when it's ready, when your guests arrive, you just pop it into the oven. If you're doing, you know, say you're doing something like the roasted kabocha squash that I was talking about before, or I'm doing another really great one that's a very sort of a great kind of decadent dish we're doing for the event, which is a miso roasted pork belly with uni and caviar and horseradish. You're getting all this great flavor. It's very sexy. And this can all be prepped directly into the casserole dishes themselves. And then you can take it out and serve them in the dishes. So having trying to unclutter your life in the kitchen is really important, and having a plan makes a huge difference.
It definitely is. Again, we're talking to Chef Seamus Mullen from the Food Network, and we're learning all about Fashion Week, especially Fashion Kitchen, so the showcase. So tell us specifically where we can find information on you, Chef Seamus, and learn more about what's going on during Fashion Week.
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter at Seamus Mullen, or you can go to my website at SeamusMullen.com, and you can get updates there on what's going on. You can follow me on Instagram as well. And, those are really the best places to find info about what I'm up to.
Well, fantastic. Anything else that you're currently doing, that you would like to promote right now, or the best thing is to just find you on Twitter or your website?
Just find me on Twitter. You know, I'm really excited to be a part of this. The CW by Corningware pieces are really amazing. I use them at home. We bake with them all the time. We roast in them. I do prep with them. And they're just incredibly versatile and a lot of work with. So it's a great product. I'm really excited about this partnership.
Well, thanks again for calling the program, Chef Seamus. You're welcome to come by anytime to talk, and whenever you have anything more to promote or interesting things. But I'm definitely going to take these tips, especially, and share this with my wife and food tips that you've been giving us today. So thanks again for calling.
Terrific. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care, guys. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network again, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And this professional athlete, quite interesting career, especially when we talk about college football and his accolades to getting to the pros, and then life after football. So I'm so excited to welcome the program former Georgia Tech star and Baltimore Raven Prince A. Daniels. Prince, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, Neil?
I'm doing fantastic, and really, when you look at your accolades playing at Georgia Tech, they're amazing for sure. Two-time all-conference tailback. You're a fourth leading rusher at Georgia Tech, and your career in college football, people might not have expected you to play college football. Am I correct? And growing up and stuff, you weren't that big time a football player, were you? Before
Georgia. No, I actually was. It was the only thing that just held me back and put me under the radar was my SAT and my ACT scores. I wasn't able to pass the standardized test until after signing date, and that was the reason why. But I was highly recruited as a young player.
Okay, so basically that'll be a great story to start off. And when academics weren't ultimately you had difficulty academically growing up while you were playing really well football in high school and in middle school and stuff, right?
I had great grades in the classroom, but the standardized tests, I'm not sure if I got bored, if I got ADD, or I really don't have an excuse for it. It's just the standardized test for me was my cup of tea. But in the classroom, the study some information, be able to recite it or regurgitate it or for the test was perfect for me. I was pretty solid. Had a very very solid background growing up. My parents, they were both there. I had great grades. It's just the SATs, man. That was the only thing that held me back from being like a big superstar.
Gotcha. And that's interesting. A lot of times when you look at and we'll look at your career and say, well, you know what? Again, another ACT SAT wrong. Like looking at your score saying you won't be successful in college. Well, you were definitely successful in college. Again, a two-time academic in the ACC at Georgia Tech, which is a tremendous school. So looking at you, this is interesting, your prospects, you're highly recruited to college. Your grades aren't where they are at. I mean, your SAT scores. What made you decide on Georgia Tech? Because you could have picked other schools, or, you know, based on the ACT, SAT score that you would excel at, and to go and walk on at a university, especially that one that's that tough academically to play football. What was the reason for Georgia Tech?
Well, a lot of things that have occurred in my life have been because of hard work and blessings, or most people call it luck. And I see preparation is the key to success for anything. Georgia Tech, they came and recruited at my high school that first year when it was my senior year. And the coach at the time, he saw one film on me, and he said, I don't want to see any more film. I want to meet the kid. And got a chance to talk to the coach and tell him my situation and what was going on. So he said that we can probably use you on the Georgia Tech football team. And he asked me, how are my grades? And I had a 3.4 in high school. And then he asked, what was my dilemma? I said, the SAT. And he told me, he said, go ahead and enroll in school. He said, because you have the grades, man. You have the grades, and you just passed the SAT score. So go ahead and enroll in school and see if you can walk on to the Georgia Tech football team. Because before, I didn't know anything about Georgia Tech. I didn't know where they were. I was like, Georgia Tech, what is that? And a lot of my friends and my coaches, they came up to me. They was like, that's a good school. I was like, oh, really? Oh, okay, cool. All right. Oh, Georgia Tech, cool. Sounds good.
So you didn't know about Georgia Tech. And where are you from, Prince, growing up?
From Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. So, again, yeah. When you're looking at Georgia, you know about Georgia. You don't know about Georgia Tech. And so you probably had goals at one point of playing at Texas, right? Was that something?
Yes, most definitely. I had goals of playing at UT. I definitely had goals of playing at UT. At the time, they were, I think, Cedric Benson. It was me and Cedric Benson, like, highly recruited. And a lot of other running backs that I'm not mentioning as well. But I remember him being a big standout in Texas, as well as myself, and I was a rising star. And so, playing at Georgia Tech was phenomenal for me. I enjoyed every bit of it. I mean, because the odds were against me. Who would have thought that a walk-on from Houston, Texas would come and start at Georgia Tech? With all the stuff that was thrown my way. I was a walk-on, had to come in, be a walk-on. Walk-ons do not get treated fairly. I had to put an emphasis on that, but it was great. It molded me to become the person that I am today, and it made me work for my scholarship and work for everything it made me work to earn my fruits and my labor, and I can really appreciate that route, rather than taking the other route.
Well, Prince, think about this. In so many ways, you're an outstanding athlete in Texas. When you're talking Texas football, you're talking specifically like almost some college universities, small colleges, where you're playing
exactly.
In front of big crowds, different things. You're treated a little bit more differently than other people because you're a star in Texas. You go and you show up at Georgia Tech, and yes, the coach said go walk on, but guess what? The people that didn't recruit you, some of the recruiters and different things, and coaches, they gave preferential treatment to players that they were highly recruiting, that gave scholarships to. Even though you have that talent, that doesn't mean anything when you're expected to be cut or not make the team, right? Because of all these other players that they spent their time, money, going out and seeing and play and give them that scholarship.
Right. So they told me that I wasn't good enough, and so my parents were a great support system. They told me, my parents asked me these specific questions. For my family, they said, are you off the team? Did they kick you off the team? Are your feelings hurt? And so for the first two questions, I said, no, they didn't kick me off the team. And no, I'm not off the team. And for that third question, I answered yes. They asked me, are my feelings hurt? And I told them yes. They said, good, stay in it. And I was wondering why my family sent me to do that when I felt like I was the one that was getting treated badly or cruelly, and nobody was on my side. But everyone was just saying, hey, no matter what's going on, stay in it.
Yes.
They understood, what my family understood was that I had the hard work and the ethic that it takes to overcome something. And they made sure that I stayed in it, and I was glad that they did do that. I was glad that they were there to support me and help me or to see me through this whole process or situation.
So, Prince, basically, you're not treated as fairly. You go into training camp. Do you even think you're going to make the team at that point?
At one point in time, they told me that I wasn't a part of the team anymore. And then when summertime came around, they said they needed more guys for camp. And so I was back on the team. So then I was on the team. I was like, okay, cool, I'm on the team. But being on the team to me wasn't as gratifying as the dream that I used to have. And so I kept working towards being a starter or being a player contribute to the Georgia Tech football team. And finally, things just start happening. I had a lot of space, and I set a goal for myself, and I worked towards that goal. Because when I was told during that time when I wasn't treated fairly, when I was told that I sucked and I'll never get a chance to play in the NFL or play at Georgia Tech, my chances of playing at Georgia Tech are 1 in 1 million. My chances of playing in the NFL are 1 in 1 billion. And one of the coaches told me that. I won't say no names, but, you know, they're still coaching right now. But that coach right there, I would say he helped me to be successful. Because, you know, even with the cruel things that were told to me, I use every single thing that he told me, and I helped. I'm sorry, I'm running from this. I transferred that negative energy, or what I perceived to be negative energy, and I changed it around and turned it to positive energy. And I promised myself that I wouldn't let anybody steal my dream from me. And so I worked towards making my dream become a reality.
So making that dream a reality, Prince, you just said, I'm not going to let the noise get to me. I am going to be, I'm going to be successful. I don't care what anyone says. This is going to be fuel to my fire, and I'm going to keep working harder and harder to reach that dream. So the first year, your freshman year at Georgia Tech, did you even see the field?
No, definitely not. I did not see the field. I was a walk-on at the time. And so the first year, you usually are redshirted. I was a walk-on, so I was a redshirt walk-on my first year. And I'm still trying to learn the ropes. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, why I'm getting treated ill compared to the other players. And finally, once I became accustomed to the schedule and the regimen, I found my place and I continued to work. So, yes, that's I had to overcome a lot of that. And I had to do it with just believing in myself. Because after I was told that I sucked and that I never played Georgia Tech, unless I happen to play on special teams, or but if I do plan on playing, it's my chances are 1 in 1 million and 1 in 1 billion. And afterwards, I went outside and sat at the bus stop, and a tear streamed down my face. And I was saying to myself, what did I do wrong? Why did this person just tell me that I suck, I'm too mechanical, and I can't play at Georgia Tech, and if I ever want to play in the NFL, my chances are slim. You know, now I joke about it. It's from, I think this quote from the Jim Carrey's movie Dumb and Dumber, when the girl said, your chances of being with me are 1 in 1 million. I joke and I say, so you're telling me I had a chance. So so I had a chance, and I was crying, and one of the coaches, he came, and he's actually one of the coaches for San Diego Chargers. He's the offensive line coach, Coach D. And he came to me. He said, hey, P, he said, keep your head up, man. He said, I heard what happened. He said, don't let nobody break your spirit, man. He said, you are the guy that we love, and you got something that a lot of these players that do have scholarships and opportunities, he said, you have something that they don't have. So keep it up. Okay. And so after he passed, okay.
So you keep working hard, then you finally get on special teams, right? It sounds like a walk-on story, right? You have to get on special teams before they even consider you in a position role, right?
Correct, right. So I ended up making I'm sorry. I didn't finish before. This is way before, okay? So when they told me that I sucked and I shed a tear, and then the coach came and spoke to me. It's two miles exactly from the Georgia Tech Athletic Center to the dorms. And I had three books in my backpack. I strapped down my backpack. I harnessed myself in my backpack, harnessed it on my back. And I got up and I took off running and I said, I'm not going to ever let anybody steal my dream. And I ran full speed, nonstop, to my dorm, 2 miles with my backpack on, so it was about 15 pounds. Because that part, somebody told me that I could not be what I wanted to be. That hurt so much, I was trying to find some other way to release that pain. And so in order for me to do that, I felt like I had to work harder so I can get rid of that pain. And during that time, when I ran back to the dorm room, I took my backpack off, put my workout gear on, and I went outside and I worked out until I passed out. And I got up, and I did that for the next 3 months. And during those next 3 months, I passed out at least 3 or 4 times. And every morning, I would get up in the morning time, and I would go and work out. I would run those 2 miles back to the weight room, and now all my teammates passed me up. And they asked if I needed a ride. I told them, no, I don't need a ride. I'm okay. I run every single day until my legs fall off, until I get to where I need to get to, because can't nobody steal my dream away from me. And that was the mentality that I had for those 3 months. And so now going to the season, yes, a walk on, got on special teams, got a chance to do some big things on special teams. We had a big game against Wake Forest. This is my first role of catching the football. And actually returning it. So I did that. I had to do that. And I returned it for like 52, 54, 56 yards, something like that. But we ended up losing the game. But afterwards, all the running backs that were in front of me, because I was seventh on the depth chart, something either happened to them, either somebody had some trouble with school, injuries came, and also it was injuries in school. And I was a person that was prepared. That's why I say preparation is the key to success. Because not knowing what my future was going to be, not knowing the outcome, not knowing if it was going to be auspicious or not, I still worked as if I was going to be the starter for Georgia Tech. And little did I know, it was my position for the taking. So that's what opportunity meets preparation. And you become successful. You become, I guess, an overnight sensation.
That's tremendous. So, okay, the hard work pays off. You depth chart, you finally get your opportunity to start, and then you never let the position go ever again. And Georgia Tech, right?
I could not let it go again. Yes.
And what did you have change the coaching staffs during that time?
Yes, we did. We had Georgia O'Leary. And then we had Chan Gailey after that. So I had George O'Leary my first year, and then Chan Gailey for the remaining years.
Interesting. Okay, so Chan ended up coaching with the Steelers at times, and I forget where he ended up after that. And I won't mention some. I've had some. I've heard stories on George, so we'll go right into from another player telling me about him. But okay, let's jump on from that situation. Moving on. So you have a great successful career at Georgia Tech. You two-time all conference tailback, fourth leading rusher in Georgia Tech at 3,300 yards. And then also the thing that really I think is talking about success is two-time academic ACC player. And that's huge too. So you really took your hard work and effort in the on the field and did the same thing in the classroom.
Correct. I did. Before I even go, I don't want to sound too boastful, but you forgot one other thing as well. I still have the leading. I still have the record for the most rushing yards in the bowl game.
Okay,
and that's been 10 years. So that's pretty cool. That was really, really cool to find that out. So every time the bowl games come on, the halftime commercial comes on for who has the most rushing yards in the bowl game.
And you come up. That's fantastic. All right, so academically, so tell us about the academics then now.
Academics. During that time, academics, I was settled. I established myself as a football player, and I understood what my role was in the classroom as well. My parents were always harped on good grades. My father, he's from a different country, so that's all he talks about is you got to have good grades. You can't play football. You can't play any sport. You can't do anything unless you have education. And my mom also was right there as well, harping on me. You got to make sure you make good grades if you want this or that. So I had incentives when it came to making good grades. So that's why it was easy for me. I made it fun. And during that time at Georgia Tech, I was in my groove. I was studying and I was performing as well. So I was doing what it took to be a college athlete all around. I studied and played hard as well. So.
Okay, so NFL comes. Did you think that now after getting all the playing time, you knew you said you were going to go to the NFL? So tell us specifically your NFL story.
All right, my NFL story. Okay, so I knew I was going to go to the NFL. Went through the whole process of getting an agent, and the day of the draft, I was in New York. And I didn't get drafted until the second day. And so I'm in New York, and my agent at the time, Vince Young and I, we both had the same agent at the time. And there was day two, and I remember saying to myself, like, man, this is, like, the most crappiest feeling ever. They didn't pick me up on day one. What kind of stuff is that? And my best friend, Jarris Wilkinson, who also played at Tech, he got drafted. He was like the second or the third to last person to get drafted on the first day. So I was extremely excited for him, but at the same time I was down about myself that I was not getting drafted. So I was getting in the shower the next day, and you know they start off with the fourth round, and I said to myself, man, forget this. I'm not even watching TV, man. I'm not even watching this stuff. So I'm getting in my shower, and as I get in the shower, my phone rings. And it's an unfamiliar number, and I'm saying to myself, who is this? I pick it up, and it's a representative from the Baltimore Ravens. Say, hey, this is so-and-so from the Baltimore Ravens. We're calling you. Hey, did anybody call you? That's what they asked me. Did anybody call you? I was like, no. I was like, okay, we'll call you back in a couple of minutes. And I was just like, what the? What's going on? Wait. So they already hung up. So then I run outside, and I look at the TV. And they say Baltimore has the next pick. The next pick is 132nd pick, fourth round. And it was 5 minutes left on TV. And they told me that they would call me back in 5 minutes. But they didn't call me back within like 30 seconds. And at the time, it was Coach Billy. He called and he said, hey, PJ. He said, Coach Billy with the Baltimore Ravens. I just want to tell you congratulations on the 132nd pick. He said, we choose you. I'll let you speak to Ozzy and a couple other people as well. So I was ecstatic, man. I mean, I forgot to take a shower that day. I turned the shower off and I celebrated with my family. But it was like a surreal moment actually getting a chance to see yourself on the TV screen and they are drafting you and they Mel Kiper is speaking about you and speaking about your potential and your future with your team and how impactful you'll be with the team with your team that you represent. I was humble because I had to come from humble beginnings. Seventh on the depth chart as a walk on, and then I get drafted and now all of a sudden I'm drafted with the Baltimore Ravens. My idea is to never be content with where you are. There's always room for improvement. So I had big plans on going to Baltimore and actually just taking over because the one thing that I do understand is the game changes every year, and every year you have to change and your mentality has to change. And so I always wanted to switch up my running style. Like I always had like two or three running styles, and I wasn't able to actually successfully perfect those styles until after I got to the NFL. And I was waiting to get a chance to display them, but a lot of things were hindered by injuries. But that was my draft day.
So your injury, your career was shortened due to injuries then, correct?
Due to injuries. It was just, and it was minor injuries too. The first one was a hamstring injury, and the second one was not really a minor one. It was a torn labrum. And I think if I know for sure, if I had a mentor, or if I just had somebody there, like in my ear, just kind of like telling me, "Hey, this is what you need to do. You should do this," then I would definitely excel. But I'm still trying to figure things out. And that's a lot for someone when you are just trying to be mindful of everything that's going on. And as a young adult coming into this lifestyle, it's pretty difficult to wrap your mind around it. So
Most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Prince, basically, how many years did you play in the NFL?
Three. I played 3 years in the NFL, and the Ravens were really, really good to me. They really took care of me, and they really wanted me to play, because every single year I end up the number two running back, for a chance to be the starter. But right before the season was started, I get injured myself, and that was because I used to work extremely hard. I didn't know how to take days off. I just always wanted to work harder than everybody and outwork everybody and just be the best.
So during that time, when did you decide to retire? Was it injury that made that decision, or was it just a few things, different things?
It was a few things. When I got injured the second time, I was placed on IR consecutively. And when I got injured the second time, it was a psychological bruise, as well as a physical one, as well as a mental one. And I needed to get away to maintain my sanity. And I don't think people really understand, that, because it's a high-stress job, and you want to contribute. You see your teammates out there contributing, and everybody knows you have to be injury-free to last in that league. And I was injured, and I was let go. They didn't tenure me my next year when I came back, because when I was doing my rehab, I did my rehab in Atlanta, Georgia, and I didn't go back to Baltimore just because I just needed to clear my mind. I was frustrated being in that place, not being able to contribute, not being able to do what I enjoy doing. I love playing football. I enjoyed the competing part of it. Just being able to compete with the guys and laugh, because I never fall down to a challenge. I'm always up for a challenge, and just being out there just made me think beyond certain things, because I remember saying to myself, man, this is the number one defense. At the time when I was at Baltimore, I was like, this is the number one defense, and I got an opportunity to go against the number one defense. I was like, I'm going to be the greatest running back in the NFL. I said, because every day I'm going to come out here and I'm going to treat the number one defense as if they are the number two and number three defense. And that was my mentality. It was just always about getting better. Like, get better each and every day. I learned a lot from Ray. Ray Lewis had told me something that was with me forever. That's why we're good friends to this day. Because he told me if I keep working how I'm working, I'll be great someday. And it was just off of me. This is something that he did. He stopped me 1 week in practice. We had a live practice, and it was one play to score a touchdown. He stopped me. And then he pulled me to the side. He explained to me. He said, hey, I'm a running back on the other side, man. I'm a running back as well on the other side. And so he said, I know a hole you're going to pick before you pick your hole. And that right there messed me up, man. I was like, what? So I went back and I watched him and I studied him and I figured out how to beat the great. And my coach used to always tell me, be patient, be patient, be patient to the last minute. Be patient to the last minute. And that's what happened. So the next week when I came back and we had to go against each other, we had a play that we ran that was similar to the one last week. And I was patient. I waited to the last minute. And right at the last minute, a hole opened up. And I slid it through the hole. And there Ray was on the other side.
And this, the hole that I slid it through was not the one he picked originally. So afterwards, I gave him a move, and then I went and scored a touchdown. And he grabbed me. He said, "Hey, man, slow your fast tail down." And he grabbed me, and he pulled me to the side. He's like, "Hey, man, you keep working like that. You keep working like that." He said, "Cause someday you're going to be great." I was like, "Appreciate it, Unc." Because that's what we call him, Unc. So...
Interesting story about Ray Lewis Prince and in so many ways as a leader and how he taught in specific ways. So you really were a talent. And you, like you said, after that time when you got released, it was a really hard transition for you. And that's when you went in your spiritual journey to finally set out and see where you're going to go in life after this, right? Life
correct.
After football. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And also, you know, keep in mind, so that's going to be something that I'm actually going to present to the NFL as well. Just about another transition program for the guys and actually why they're doing it right now. But we'll talk about that later. I don't want everybody to know about it.
Oh, we got to have you back on the show, man, and we'll talk about that stuff for sure. I mean, I work with a lot of NFL. I don't know if your publicist told you, I've interviewed a lot of NFL athletes from before and that are currently playing. I work with an organization called Insightful Player that has some great current athletes that are NFL players and former, and always having interesting athletes on. So, Prince, okay, so basically this is your journey. You say, I got to do something, so you're out now doing speaking engagements and also doing some and so tell us specifically what you're doing now.
All right. Brace yourself. Get ready. So I'm a philanthropist. I am a kid author. I'm a fitness guru, international fitness guru, so I travel across the world and train people in other countries. I'm an international motivational speaker. I teach meditation, and I have a mentorship program.
Oh, you got a lot. You have a lot of things going on, Prince. Wow.
I have a lot of things going on.
I don't know. Yeah. And that's why we've gone. We might have to have part two, honestly, to just talk about this stuff all together. But I mean, your story was fantastic about football and you really giving us a great thing. So you wrote a book on, specifically enough, you said a children's book. Is that correct?
A children's book. Yeah, correct. I wrote a children's book, and the children's book is a self-help book. And it teaches kids how to meditate vicariously through the character. And it teaches kids how to be a genie as well. And what I mean by that is that you are the genie that makes your dreams come true. So just like how I made my dream a reality, the same thing for the kids. I mean, I'm actually giving them a reflection of my life. And the reflection of my life is actually the same thing that they will see in their own story that they write. Because we are the illustrators and the artists of our stories. So we're the ones who write them. And if there's something that you want to be, you put your mind and your heart to it, and you go for it. And that's just the bottom line. There's nothing else. I mean, if there's something that you really want, you close your eyes, you let your eyes adore your mind, and then you let your mind adore your heart, and you go for what it is that you want.
Well, you've done that. You did that with Georgia Tech. Your dream's the NFL. Now with as an internationally known speaker and philanthropist and book author and all the different things and something else possibly with the NFL. So a lot of great things. So where can we find information on you, Prince, and learn more about you?
You can find information on me. Oh, my goodness. I have to call my manager. He has all this information. But I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. All the social media stuff. And I'll be having another website coming out real soon.
It's PrinceDanielsJr.com. Also, Twitter at Prince_ FACTORE, and also you can facebook.com/PrinceDanielsJr. All right, cool. Well, fantastic, man. Great talking to you. I'll tweet it out when it airs in syndication. Best of luck, and we'll definitely connect again. We should talk sometimes about some of your other athlete friends that might want to come on the show as well, but thanks again for calling, Prince.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate this opportunity, and thank you.
All right, take care, man. I'll see you later.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.